This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Network fans, welcome back across the ponds for episode number 23 of the most consistently inconsistent podcast in all the codes of pods, the Special Relations. My name is Callum McDougall, and we have an excellent show lined up for your listening pleasure, with all the usual segments, and as ever, we are not alone in doing this. First off, we have a man who scores well in the hardest working podcaster and being from Stoke-on-Trent categories, but whose mark is dragged down by a low score and the tolerance for crap WWE segments. It's the powerhouse in the Potteries, Ben Locke. Ben, good evening.
Good evening, Callum. Good evening, everybody. I don't know what you mean. I really enjoy 2021 WWE. I don't know what you're on about.
No. I was thinking more of Cody doing whatever Cody Rhodes does.
In the course of tonight, I will go on about that. Yeah, that, you know, it's always like having a really good dessert and then finding, you know, the fact it's like Black Forest Gatto or something right at the end, you know. Oh, that man. Anyway, move on.
Or you could be like Sean and, you know, sit down for a nice trifle and find out it's got, you know, it's been sautéed with peas and onions and beef. And that's like Josh Alexander winning the belt after a year's build and then losing it seconds later. That one's for you, Sean. That one's for you.
I was going to say peas or even mousse.
Oh, I wish I'd thought of that. That's excellent. Rory, edit all my bit in between. That's a belter. Excellent. And I've also given away who the second man is, but it should come as no surprise. He is a man who scores high in the podcast legend category and whose overall mark is getting better with every coming week, with his ever-increasing rating in the eliteness category. It's the Special Relations Shakespeare, Rory McNamara. Rory, good evening.
Good evening. It's now the time I tell you I haven't watched Dynamite or Rampage for about 4 weeks.
Oh, that's terrible. Oh, that's disappointing.
I wasn't going to interrupt you because, you know, that stirring introduction, Callum, you know, it was all there, wasn't it? I couldn't cut you off in full flight, could I?
Well, get the podcast. That's why I put the podcast legend bit in for.
Forever. I think forever almost elite. I can always see it on my headstone, you know.
Oh, that really disappoints me that you've not watched Rampage in a few weeks, because Rampage was becoming your show. A nice, tight, one-hour show. Like, all about the wrestling, Young Bucks aside. That was becoming like Rory McNamara on television.
I was just too much of a skinflint to fork out the £4.49 for a second month of Fight App subscription or whatever.
Well,
it was.
To be fair,
all I will say in this house right now, maybe I'll give some more details next month, but let's say we're just, you know, tightening those purse strings just a little in this house for a very special reason. Stay tuned until next month.
Very special relations, meaning.
And I'm afraid, yes, even AEW has to take a back seat.
God forbid.
And you know how hard it is for me to do that on anything?
No.
If you can find it, Rory, you do need to watch that Pac Andrade match.
I've heard good things. And coming from you especially, Mr. Locke, I will make sure I find it one way or the other. Because the one they had on, the first one they had a few weeks ago was extremely good, let it be said.
Yeah, and but Callum is correct. Like, it was a pretty damn good episode of Dynamite last week, ruined almost completely, but bought me by Mr. Rhodes. That will not shock anybody.
No, not at all. And Rory, I can't slag you at all for cancelling the AEW Plus or whatever it's called, because I got it on the Friday afternoon to do the Twitch stream for Rampage and cancelled it on the Saturday morning.
I'm the exception because I've kept mine going because I'm quite like watching these old Dynamites, but they do need to add the pay-per-views on there. Like, even if
they really should do that. Yeah, I do. It's a serious point. Having to pay $19.99 for an old pay-per-view on what is effectively a streaming service, let's be honest, that's not on. Although, in fairness, no, his lordship, Mr. Khan, as we must call him, has said that a proper streaming service is coming, maybe even as early as the first quarter of next year. So that's a good idea if it happens, and even I'd be all over that. But get the archive pay-per-views after 1 month, get them on there too.
It's like, I went back to try and find an NWA pay-per-view in the run-up to one of the ones that we were doing on Twitch. And even like the ones from very, very early Billy Corgan, like pre-Power pay-per-views, were still £20-25 to buy. And they're like 3 years old now.
The serious point, I mean, I know it's not on Fight anymore, but like Impact Plus was on there, and they were, and even Impact were able to archive the pay-per-views. So I don't see why the likes of AEW, ROH, and NWA can't do that.
Oh, yeah, well, the North Face, the Fight app it's not an AEW presentation, is it, in the strictest sense of the word. So if they do have their own streaming service, as is Mr. Khan, Mr. Khan, Bal, has said on more than one occasion, is coming our way next year, then all well and good, I think.
That full barrel curtsy, gentlemen. Remember, you're getting right.
That's it. When AEW comes to Craven Cottage next year, we'll go to Buckingham Palace. We'll pay our respects to Her Majesty. We'll do a curtsy, and then we'll do an even lower curtsy for when Tony Khan comes out and tries to say, like, do what he did with the basketball player, I don't think he could say his last name, so he just went, Yanis. So when he tries to do, I don't know, what's his name? The Striker guy. Alexander Mitrovic. Or, who's the man? Oh, Marco Silva's the man. I was going to say Jokanović. But when he tries to do that, brings out the great and the good of West London football.
We've got that disease debate next year at some point. Like, you know, AEW All Out or as yet unnamed UK pay-per-view.
Special relations live, baby.
Carnage in Cardiff.
Right there, isn't it?
That'll just be us.
Cardiff is one of the great cities.
It's lovely. Not seen much of it. We've only seen Castle Street in the stadium.
Turn down our offer of doing a live, 100% live recording during the England-Scotland game this year. Not going to be lucky twice, Ben. Next year. Maybe even both of these pay-per-views over here, we're going to be recording them as live can be. And I ain't going to edit a second.
I don't know. I don't know why you're considering me the lucky one, because the two of you were almost embarrassed that night. John Stones hit the post in the first 5 minutes, and then we battered through nothing each for the rest of the game.
No doubt about it.
Battered.
As boring as it sounds, gents, you know, I had to actually go see real people.
So overrated.
Zoom
calls don't do it anymore. We had to meet a bit public at one point or another.
I don't know if it helps or hinders your case, Callum, that Scotland's best chance fell to Stephen O'Donnell.
don't even get me fucking started, man. I saw no word of a lie. I walked past him on Buchanan Street in Glasgow, and he looked lost in Buchanan Street. Honestly, he was walking beside his missus, and his missus just walked past him the same way that Jack Grealish would walk past him, or any other footballer would walk past him. He has no spatial awareness whatsoever, and he's walking beside his girlfriend. Anyway, I feel that we may have lost the listeners at this point. Talking about Stephen fucking O'Donnell.
I think that's the deepest of deep cuts.
It's the deepest of the deep cuts. I'm just glad you didn't bring up Scott McKenna, because that would have been taken the 10-minute rule. I cannot stand him. Anyway, speaking of the 10-minute rule, I feel that we should... I don't feel that we should. The Right Honourable Member, Rory McNamara from Birmingham, or the Right Honourable Member from Birmingham, Rory McNamara, as I believe is the proper parlance, would like to bring the 10-minute rule to the floor this month. So, Mr. McNamara, I will set up a timer here. You have 10 minutes to present your bill on your given subject. And feel free to just start, and I'll pick up the 10 minutes whenever.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Mr. Deputy Speaker. We are recording this on the day of the budget announcement here in the UK, everybody. So the Deputy of Ways and Means, as the Deputy Speaker is otherwise known, takes the chair. I'm sure you all really cared about that. Anyway, so my 10-minute rule bill today is on the topic of analysis of professional wrestling. Now, I present a pro wrestling podcast with an esteemed guest. Esteemed guest and esteemed host called the Wrestling 20. Get that one in. Called the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast, where we sit and watch hours, and I do mean hours, of pro wrestling from, as I'm sure you've already worked out by now, 20 years ago. And we make copious notes. We plow through the Wrestling Observer, and that takes some plowing through, and the PW Torch. We come up with our questions. We come up with our comebacks. We review it as if it's happened in the timeline, and I've done my plug for the podcast 2 hours early. But there is a reason for mentioning it. It takes up a very, very large amount of our time. Very much labour of love, let it be said. Want to put it on the record too, but hours and hours a month to prepare for that podcast alone. And I mentioned that to parlay into a discussion over the next 10 minutes about over-analysis of professional wrestling. I find it very difficult when I'm preparing stuff for that podcast to really sit back and enjoy it. And for all the criticisms of 2001 WWF, and they are legion, and we have many of them on the show, it's a very hot and exciting product. They pack a lot into the 1.5 hours on the network on each Raw and SmackDown. Beautifully timed pay-per-views as well at 2 hours, 40 minutes. Lots to enjoy. Lots to enjoy. Easy for me to say, if I allowed myself to enjoy it. Before I criticise anybody here, I am very much putting my own head on the plinth. It can be very, very easy, and this is where my main problem comes in, too easy to forget what professional wrestling is all about. When England regained the Ashes in 2009, thank you, Graham Swann famously said in an interview that he didn't really care about winning the Ashes that much because, and I quote, cricket is a bit rubbish really, isn't it? And Graham Swann, and I know you're listening, hope you don't mind me stealing your line here, because pro wrestling's a bit rubbish, isn't it, really? Are we really thinking about it? You know, it's people who can't really act, can't really emote, probably with the best will in the world and a couple of exceptions, can't really do a much lot of anything, really. Fake fighting each other in their underwear. I'm not really peeling back the wizard's curtain here for anybody listening, I rather suspect, but I think it's something we could do well to remember. Pro wrestling's ultimate goal, when it first became a work, the open secret, early 1920s, the days of the fucking Farmer Burns and what have you, everybody knew the deal with pro wrestling. Nobody didn't, unless your IQ or age were in single digits, or shoe size maybe, if you're Prince. But, where did that one come from? Talk about just run down the clock. But, most importantly of all, it's there to be enjoyed, okay? That doesn't mean you should just sit back and be a passive consumer, because I don't really think that works with any form of scripted entertainment, be it film, be it TV, be it theatre, be it anything. You've got to have your brain semi-engaged. I don't think pro wrestling does itself any favours when it presents itself as completely mindless or puerile or base level or lowest common denominator. Now, it applies to all of those far too often, it must be said, but that's really a debate and a discussion for another day. This isn't like the late 80s, early 90s editions of Melody Maker, where it's aimed way above your head, and if you understand it, you're not really meant to. Not at all. It should be there where you're alive to it, you'll have the opportunities to analyse and discuss and all of that, but you should never, ever, ever, because I think this is potentially quite dangerous, and this is the sort of thing that leads to the problems we see online a lot with certain tribes of people, if you know what I mean. Never, ever, ever let that get away. Have fun, okay? No matter what form of pro wrestling you're into, yes, WWE, OES, AEW, NJPW, whatever, whoever it might say that it is aimed at, whoever it wants to think it is aiming itself at, pro wrestling is there. It should be 10% for the head, 90% for the heart. I do think most people, yes, even the saints, the less so sainted Vince McMahon, they do understand this. Okay. My issue with a certain subset of pro wrestling fan is that either they don't understand this or they don't want to understand it. And when you start bringing out the abacus is there just to your side, there's a reason at work, right? There's a reason you don't want to be the person who gets into work at 8 o'clock and sees the email, you're the one working on the pivot tables on Excel for this project, right? You don't want to be getting that email because pivot tables, they ain't much fun. Believe me, I've tried. So when you try to apply, maybe because I don't fucking know how to do them, but when you try to apply anything like that to entertainment, I think it's a fool's errand. I think you're at the very best going down a rabbit hole, at the very worst getting to a place you might not be able to. So yes, don't turn your brain off completely. Don't treat it as stupid, because then it will treat you as stupid back, which pro wrestling shouldn't be. But we are here, people who spend hours and hours working on pro wrestling podcasts, for God's sake. We're all aware of the contradictions, but you've got to put enjoyment first, start number crunching the numbers. Put it the other way around, potentially leads to issues.
Thank you very much, Mr. McNamara. I will try and keep it as brief as I can. I have a problem with, like, most statistics in sports. So I'll use football, soccer as an example. Expected goals. What is the point of expected goals? And it's the same kind of thing with wrestling. And by the way, when I say this, I'm a contradiction in myself, because I hate the term sports entertainment with a passion. It's wrestling. But like Rory says, we are forgetting the entertainment aspect of it. I'm not saying everything's going to be bright and colourful and a big, circus act or whatever. That's not what I'm saying. But let's get the entertainment. Let's get people back watching the product, and then we can focus on the sport and the numbers. Because guess what? We all do things here on podcast. We're all on different podcasts where we rank things and we give star ratings out to matches. That's fine, but you know, we just need to. I think we're all in this place where we've gone far too analytical, and we all need to start enjoying things again. And I don't know whether it was like a COVID lockdown thing. Everybody's watching a lot more wrestling. We all hunkered down, and we all became a bit more analytical. I think that might be a part of it. But you know, let's just enjoy things again. I mean, we're going to talk in a bit about 2021 wrestling. There's some stuff that I don't like, but then there's some things I do, and at the moment I want to try and concentrate on the positive. Yes, there's a lot of negative out there, but those things are fixable. You know, we don't need like numbers on everything to enjoy something. And I'll let Callum have the next few minutes.
Thank you. So valid points all round there, gents. We are in a position where you have got six. Scott on the main event always talks about the top six, the six pack. So you've got something for everyone. You've got AEW who's doing their best to try and get everyone in. You've got WWE who, for the most part, doesn't market itself to ourselves. But you've got, if you want to watch old school style stuff, you've got the NWA. If you want to watch more pure stuff, you've got Ring of Honor. If you want to see guys beat the shit out of each other, you've got New Japan. If you want to see something in between all of them, you've got Impact. If you want to see something that's a bit more mature and edgy potentially, you've got All Elite. Or if you want something that's completely mind numbing, but you might see a good match now and again, you've got WWE. You don't need to, like, there's no. We watch SummerSlam, and I always harken back to SummerSlam. They presented us, there was good matches on SummerSlam, there wasn't anything great on it, but eventually we get bored because it's very repetitive. We watched what was the last All Out, I think was the last one we watched, and there was something for everyone, and but I don't, the whole concept of star ratings is, to me, I find it very difficult to rate. To rate matches, I remember Sean gave me such a hard time for ranking the Wahoo Ric Flair 2-3 Falls match in Early Crock and Rose and 1¾ stars. But I didn't enjoy that match. But that shouldn't, because I rated it 1¾ stars and Sean rated it 4 stars and Sousa rated it 3½ stars. That doesn't mean they're wrong. I don't think they're wrong as much as I'm not wrong. Just because they're right in their minds for giving it 4 stars, I'm not wrong for giving it 1.75. At the end of the day, as you said, Rod, it's all about entertainment. You find something that entertains you at the bare minimum. You've got to remember that this is a hobby, potentially. It is something you enjoy doing. And to me, if you're overanalyzing it, it becomes less of a hobby and less of something that you can just switch your mind off to and, you know, relax to. And it almost becomes a second job. You expect to see goals, stuff like that being brought up. It's stats for the sake of stats. To me, that's not enjoyable. But again, to other people, it might be, and that might be me contradicting my whole argument. That do what you find enjoyment in. But to me, I think it's also difficult to analyse. And this is my last point I'll make quickly. Difficult to analyse a predetermined performance art. It's sports entertainment. It's not, and it's on Sky Sports and it's on Fox Sports and all these sort of things, but predominantly in America it's on Fox and it's on the USA Network before and after drama, before and after other scripted television. It's a performance art, and I think if you're trying to analyse a performance art, you might be looking a wee bit too much into it. But again, the whole argument, each to their own, but that's me.
Order, order.
Have we done it?
We have done it.
Bloody hell.
Hardened professionals, us, I tell you.
There we go, I know.
Robin Hoff is podging. Post the big on at the end. Podcast legendariness is rubbing off.
I'm glad you thinged. I'm glad you clarified that one, because at the start you just cut off after you said rubbing off. I thought, excuse me, it's before the watershed, sir. It's only
a bit early in the show for that.
It's starting to turn the blue there.
I take a dim view of that in this particular chamber, I rather suspect.
Honestly, turning the air blue there. I thought we were going silk stockings or something after Rob, you know, USA Network. That's bloody hell.
I think it might be anyway time at this point, James.
Anyway. Alright, so the main topic of conversation is actually going to piggyback off what we spoke about in the 10-minute rule. We're moving away from the analysis and we're going on to talk about, well, I don't know if we're going to end up talking about the segment itself, but there was a certain segment on SmackDown between, and because we're not allowed to mention the person's name, I will go with a 6-foot blonde lady who just happens to be a world champion, and Rebecca Lynch. I'm going to give her a full name. And guess what? It was terrible, to the shock of absolutely nobody. Basically, kids, we're swapping titles and they're wondering why people don't want to watch their product anymore. So I'm going to throw it to the floor and just go, are the girls wrong on this? Or is it creator's fault? Because after the match, after the whole segment, there was this whole hullabaloo intention and everybody on, you know, various news reporting sites reporting that, you know, I nearly said it.
Yeah, well done. There we go. It was fun while it lasted. There we go.
He said it. Between the two of the principal ladies in the ring, Sonya Deville being the other, there was a bit of an argument / fight, and one of the ladies was asked to leave. Now, the question I'm going to put forward, like I said, is this just tension between the two that just boiled over, or is this just creative just being absolutely terrible, or even a mix of both? And I will throw that question first to Mr. McDougall.
Thank you very much, Ben. I feel that every single person involved in this was in the wrong in some way, shape or form. Sans one Sonya Deville. She was actually the one who was most professional in this and kept that segment from going completely off the rails. So congratulations, and much praise should go. And I've not seen a lot of praise for Sonya Deville on it, but she kept her cool and just was like, right, okay, pick the belt up, let's keep this going. Absolute professional is Sonya Deville. I likened it to a very light version of Sean and Brett. You've got these two women who are the two biggest female stars alongside Bayley and Sasha. They're on, as much as we can like or dislike any of those in the four, they are clearly a step above everybody else. Now, things obviously got very heated between Sean and Brett, and that's for many different reasons, one of which, maybe years down the line we'll get the same thing, but Sean basically owned up to being an absolute bell end. And Brett, he's like, listen, Brett Hart's not a saint either in the whole thing. I think I've made my thoughts clear on previous episodes of this podcast about my thoughts on Brett Hart. But they should never have been put in that position in the first place. The whole, who wins? Like, Becky and Charlotte certainly don't win. Well, sorry, Charlotte might win because she's got this other, she's a phantom title change and she's managed to get another world championship closer to the 16 that we know that they're going to try and emulate. They might even have her beat it now, given what's come out recently. But no one won. It was crap booking. It was a crap segment. It made the two women in it look like absolute, they didn't come out of that looking good because they just swapped her. They were meant to, and I say this and me believing that it was a shoot. It's not. This isn't part of their grandmaster plan. They were just meant to hand over the belts and go, thanks very much. So you get two heels doing that. It was okay last year. I say okay and Dr. Evil air quotes when it was the New Day and the Street Profits because they were both face teams. You could understand that they would all get on and go, right, okay, this is not ideal, but there you go. There's your belt. We'll take ours now. But you get two women who you're positioning as heels. It was absolutely batshit insane booking to even put yourself in this position, and it just shows how lazy they're getting, that they couldn't come up with a solution. This is like, we're going, right, we'll do a draft, we'll reset everything, and there's been things come out recently about the whole tag team situation, that they've got no foresight. They just thought, right, we'll put you there. There was no thought to breaking up tag teams. There was no thought of what's going to happen to these tag team wrestlers after, and the same things happened here. They had thought, oh fuck, we've put Charlotte and Becky on opposite brands, they've got the other brand's belt, what the fuck are we going to do? They might as well just rename both belts, in all honesty, because that would have made just as much sense as what they did. I think it was just, the whole grander issue that the WWE have got just now, of being incapable of booking anything that's remotely interesting, or anything that's remotely good. It was just epitomised in that one 10-minute segment on SmackDown the other week.
So, Rory, having seen it, what's your views on the whole Saudi saga?
Yeah, there are really two points to look at here. The segment itself and what it means for she, who I'm going to do my best not to name over the next few minutes. Wish me well on that one person. It's not going to happen. I'm coming down on you, Ben. I'm not going to fucking do it either. I know I'm going to slip up.
You can do this.
So the segment first, I should be on safer ground here, I think. I can pronouns pal. There we go. Pronouns all the way. See, there you go, Vince. One up on you. So the segment was awful. I don't think anybody, even Green Lantern person, would turn around and say this was a good segment. And I'm sure he'd try. Awful idea at the best of times. And I was also going to bring up the New Day Street Profits belt exchange from last year, but Callum has already elucidated that extremely eloquently, as you would expect. This was the main event to SmackDown, okay? Wasn't this the main event to any SmackDown? It was the main event coming out of, whether we like it or not, and I suspect we're more the latter than the former, but whether we like it or not, it's probably the biggest show of the year these days, isn't it? You know? The roar of the SmackDown or roar after Crown Jewel doesn't really flow off the tongue. Pun intended, I'm afraid to say. if you keep your tongue by the end of it, you've done well. Oh, a little bit of politics there, everybody. But it's the way it is, I'm afraid, and it's going to be like that for many, many years to come. At least another 12 of those shows. Fucking appalling. Anyway, that's not the point here. Just a dreadful segment. Where can anybody possibly be invested in a segment like this? I was almost tempted to reach for my spreadsheet and abacus myself during this one, just to give myself something else to try to do. Just try to really work out those pesky pivot tables rather than watching this dreadful segment, which, well, I was going to say it devalues the titles, but how many times have we said that sentence anyway? No. This would make Harold Wilson in 1967 blush. A little bit more of politics there. Again, look it up. I'm sure you're all going to. Why should anybody care if you can just swap the belts anyway? I've more than a lot of people, I've been a vocal, I wouldn't quite call myself an opposer of the brand split, but a skeptic, let's say, for many, many years. I think it actually creates more problems than it solves, and I always have. But one thing they did get right with the brand split for many years, despite all the other problems, I don't ever remember them being called the Raw and the SmackDown title. You had the world title, WWE title, whatever you want to call it. You had the world heavyweight title. Again, another potential problem, having two world championships. Again, that's another issue. But at least you knew where you stood with them. And when they swapped, when they did the draft, like, for example, Cena winning the world heavyweight title at Survivor Series 2008, you can let it go. Here, you are all but tacitly admitting the only thing that separates these titles and makes them in any way prestigious is the name of the show attached to them. And then further on from that, we're saying that they can just be changed on a whim willy-nilly simply because each brand needs to have one champion. And there's the other problem as well, that the Federation booked themselves into a corner they didn't need to by putting both of these people, there we go, up for drafting across the separate brands anyway. Yep, and I take that point completely. You still didn't really have to do this, though. If the Raw champion's on SmackDown and the SmackDown champion's on Raw, is anybody really going to pay that much attention to it? Really? You're just beating us over the head with the fact that these things are just exchangeable bits of tin. So it's an appallingly bad segment at the best of times. It's kind of just having two heels do it, main eventing a SmackDown on network television. Thumbs down motion, fart sound. Brings us to our second point, and that's the reaction, which has now been very well documented in many, many reputable sources, of... Oh, it's so fucking hard, isn't it? Can I say Ashley? Can I get away with that? The character played by Ashley Fleer? Is that one on? Can I get the green tick there? Okay.
Yeah, I've
never thought about this before. I'm close to the edge on this one. I don't think you're going to let me have another one like that. Anyway, we all know who I'm talking about and her reaction on air. Okay, first off, this was not a worked shoot. Okay? Semi-tangent is one I've made many times in the past. Sure, I'm going to make it again. But look, fans, okay? Working the smarts, it's an awful phrase at the best time, but working the smarts is so far down the list of priorities of a branded media content company that it's not even funny, okay? That is not what they are in this for, right? It's not 20 years ago. It is in my head many times, but it's not 20 years ago. They haven't got people on their booking team, on their writing staff, who remotely care about that sort of thing, okay? So if something happens on screen that looks not quite right, then it really is going to be not quite right. See the shoot fight between Nia and Nia's opponent a few weeks ago on Raw, for another example. I'm scaring myself now, this one. That wasn't meant to happen. The belt was not meant to be thrown down. That has been proved by, say, reputable sources, Wade Keller, the boy Sap, lots of others, okay? She went into business for herself on that one because she didn't want, even for a couple of seconds, Becky to hold both the belts in her hand, right? I suppose you can say that her own dedication to the presentation of the titles is admirable in a roundabout way. But again, as I've just said, the belts mean, sadly, this isn't, should be the case, but it is, the belts mean next to nothing these days. And two, most importantly of all, that's not hers to say. No, you might well disagree with what you're being told to do in pro wrestling. And indeed, if it's Vince McMahon telling you, I really do hope that more often than not, you do disagree with what you're being told. But if you've done some bartering and you've tried to use your stroke, to use another terrible word, and yet you've still got to go out there and do it, then you've still got to go out there and do it. You've got to maintain professionalism. You don't have to like it. Like, I'd be disappointed if a lot of the times what they have their performing seals doing, if they did like it. But this is the nature of the beast. This is, as I say, a branded media content company. You've got to pay the piper. And if it was written in the script that the belts had to be handed over to Becky and she was allowed to be Becky Two Belts again for just a couple of seconds before she returns the belt back to you, then that's what's going to happen. And throwing your toys out of the pram on live television to the point where, as Callum has also rightly said, Sonya Deville, and she did brilliantly, by the way, had to hold it together to stop things going completely down the pan. That's when you need to start asking yourself some serious questions. And the best thing about her asking herself serious questions is that she doesn't need to mention her name either when she's doing so. So she scores points on this one too. But just to wrap up before I come back to Ben on this, awful segment, wouldn't even pretend to try to make a case for it. One of the worst of the year in a very, very crowded field. But as bad as it was, that's what it said on the docket. So you go ahead and do it. You make your case before, you make your case after, you do not make your case during.
Very good. But I'm just going to add a couple of things. So first of all, this segment, the idea of the segment and the whole belt situation, I'll go into that before I talk about the segment. As we all know, Becky's had a child with Seth Rollins, right? You know, little Rue. Can you imagine little Rue's going to be sat down and going, Mummy, when they're watching this, Mummy, how did you win this title? Oh, I just swapped it with her over there. You didn't beat her in the ring? No. We were just on separate shows, so we had to swap it. I had a problem going into the segment before it even aired, because I know Callum said about this, the tag title situation last year. That was just as bad. They just didn't air that.
Just to come back in very quickly, Ben. Sorry, that didn't main event the program either. That was a quick backstage segment. This was in front of the crowd, main event, network TV.
No, but it's still what's his name. As a fan, like, why should I care about either title?
Agreed, absolutely. Never do it anywhere. No matter what your latitude and longitude is, don't do it.
Basically, we're just turning title belts into, swapping stickers in a sticker book. That's what we're doing. So, like Rory said, so do we have a situation where champions don't get drafted or whatever? Or do we have a situation where we don't name the championship after the show they're on? That might, I think that's what's happened. They've booked themselves into a corner and they couldn't get out of it because they've got no cohesive right. Let's face it, right? So we're in October now. So we know coming up, we're going to have, and God, boys, you're going to love me, the battle for brand supremacy, followed by the road to the Royal Rumble, followed by the Rumble itself, followed by the road to WrestleMania. There's no actual writing in storylines that's going to take place in the next 4 or 5 months because it's all about done for you in their, brand speak, management speak, 4 or 5 word strap lines. It's done. They have to do it. And so there's that. So that's the problem I have as a fan. We talked about analysis and entertainment. So there's nothing at the moment really entertaining me. When one of the best parts of one of the shows is Happy Corbin, You've got a fucking problem. All right, I'm just going to rant it there. We'll just leave it at that. Now, as for you know, she who will not be named throwing the toys out the pram. Yes, I understand why she did it, but like Rory says, you don't do it on TV. So Sonya Deville deserves all the credit in the world for somehow making that segment watchable. Because, you know, that sounds like damning with fake praise, but at that moment, making that segment watchable was the best thing possible. Because, let's face it, neither of those two women were cooperating with each other at that point. So yeah, I have a bigger problem with the writing, but neither Becky or, I'm going to say it, Rory, Becky or Charlotte helped themselves in that. And going forward, probably the best thing for all concerned is if, you know, Blondie goes away for a bit, whether that's, you know, an injury angle or, you know, goes work with a boyfriend for a while. I don't know. Something needs to happen there because, you know, and people can say, oh, but they couldn't change the title. Well, okay. So you've got Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair both right there, both injury free, both fantastic, both can work. You could have done something, you know, at Crown Jewel, there was a perfect opportunity, but you decided not to do that. And then you wonder why people are complaining now. And like I say, it's, Charlotte was a baby, Becky was a baby, but it's endemic of a bigger problem within the company at the moment. And it's a problem that I don't see a solution for, sadly.
Let's keep it rolling. Callum, comeback question for you. So
yes.
where does this leave you know who at this point? Because we're not exactly talking first defence here.
I don't really know.
Is she becoming more trouble than she's worth? And she would tell you she is worth a hell of a lot.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people that have said that they were more trouble than they're worth, and they've ended up. The Ultimate Warrior thought he was untouchable, and he gets sacked twice.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Austin thought he was. Steve Austin thought he was untouchable in 2002, and they weren't exactly desperate for him to come back. Everyone has got Hogan less than 93. Like, they were never. No one is irreplaceable. And I think that's. It might be best for everybody if they just cut ties. Because you could have a Shawn Michaels situation where she knows that she'll get an absolute metric fuck ton of money if she goes to Jacksonville. The WWE don't necessarily want to lose her, but she's becoming a bit of a headache. Sans a freak injury that Shawn Michaels got in January 98. Who knows how long that would have lasted anyway. He could have ended up in WCW for all we know. It could be just about time that they just cut ties. Cut bait and just let her go and do what she wants for a while. Everyone comes back eventually. Ultimate Warrior came back. Jeff Jarrett came back. Like, people who you thought had burned all those bridges. Eric Bischoff worked for the WWE 18 months after he was the chief executive or whatever he was, president of WCW. Everyone will come back eventually. If there's money to be made, Vince McMahon will cut a check. But I think at this point in time, yeah, she might just be getting a bit too. She might start believing in her own hype. And you know what? I don't think. I personally, and you all know everyone knows my thoughts on her, I don't think she's worth it. I think there's people in the company you would try harder for. But I just don't think it's worth the hassle.
I'd agree with that.
I think Becky is somebody you probably don't want to piss off. She made a pretty decent character out of that in 2018, 2019, didn't she? But I think it rings truer than we might think. I just get the impression that whatever role Becky is given, she will do it to the best of her ability. but she's probably developing a few debits rather than credits against the E at the moment. And if it turns out that Charlotte ends up, I'm cooking up myself then, just for that one, is being favoured over her, I'm not sure Bianca would mind so much if it was over her. Sasha is an interesting one. I don't think Bailey would care, but I think Becky would, because I do think Becky, rightly or wrongly, does believe our own hype. Again, some might say she's justified to do so. That's another discussion for another day. Having a few of these, aren't we? But if she gets the sense that the person I've already named now is getting preferential treatment, she's not the person you want to upset. And judging by her reaction on screen last Friday as well, where I think she put a little bit of extra sauce behind that chuck of the belt right at the very end, maybe that's happening already. And would wouldn't it just be like the Federation to screw this up with a women's roster they've got and they end up cocking it all up?
Well, I think it's quite interesting. Like, you know, alluded to the fact that I'm not a massive fan of modern wrestling, 2020-2021 wrestling, but you know, so if we go right back to the first lockdown, those heady days before Performance Center Mania, let's go back to that. You know, Becky and Charlotte were untouchable at that stage, weren't they? They were on top. There was a clear gap, and whilst lockdown happened, you know, that's where Bailey's stock began to rise, Sasha's stock began to rise, Bianca came into the picture. You've got someone like Oscar, her stock rose, and so when you've got these two people who, you know, and I'm trying to word this the right way, just don't feel as important because you've got four or five other people who have proven they're just as good. They just need a crowd to prove it in front of now. And I think that's part of the issue as well. Like Rory says, like, you've got these people with credits and debits, but guess what? Charlotte and Becky probably aren't as vital and as important as you once thought they were because you've got these other great talents around them now.
Charlotte's fault, she who shall not be named fault.
I think you're all right now. I think I've mentioned it about that time. You're okay.
She thinks she's untouchable. But I've got the, and if you humour me for a second, gentlemen, I have got the female roster for WWE at the minute.
Okay.
So, on Raw, Alexa, Asuka, Becky. I'll do it out with those two. Alexa, Asuka, Bianca Belair, Carmella, Dana Brooke, Drew Drop, Eva Marie, Lacey Evans, Liv Morgan, Mia Yim, Nia Jax, Nikki Ash, Zelina, Rhea Ripley, Tamina, and Tegan Knox. On SmackDown, you have got Aliyah, B-Fab, Bayley, Naomi, Natalya, Sasha, Shayna, Shotzi, Sonya Deville, Toni Storm, and Xia Li. You've got a massive roster on NXT. Amari Miller, Candice LeRae, Cora Jade, Dakota has just come back last night. Spoilers. Yep. Electra Lopez, Ember Moon, Frankie Monet, Gigi Dolan, Indy Hartwell, Io Shirai, Ivy Nile, JC Jane, Jesse Kamea, Casey Catanzaro, Katrina Cortez, Kaylee Ray, Caden Carter, Lash Legend, Mandy Rose, Mei Ying, Persia Perota, Raquel Gonzalez, Saray, Scarlett, Valentina Feroz, Zayda Ramia, Zoe Stark, and in the UK, Amali, Aoife Valkyrie, Blair Davenport, Danny Luna, Amelia McKenzie, Isla Dawn, Ginny, Meika Satomura, Nina Samuels, Stevie Turner, and Zia Brookside. They're not short of female talent. And that is, the talent that's on there is ridiculous. On one of those brands alone, on NXT alone, it's stacked with talent. It might just be more, they might just be a bit more trouble than they're worth at this point in time. The argument that Rory, you were making is that certain people wouldn't Charlotte getting preferential treatment. I think that Becky's problem, I think, has been from how she managed to, and I'm not using this as an excuse in any way, shape or form, but the way that she was on the verge of, I believe she was on the verge of quitting wrestling, and then she managed to, she went for one last go, got signed. So she's had to drag her way up from nothing on the Irish and UK independent scene, which was on its arse. So she's worked hard to get there, and to her, the antithesis of that is someone who's potentially using her last name to her advantage. I think that is potentially what's where she is, because their journey to this point has been completely opposite. And potentially Becky managed to get herself over in spite of what happened. She might not have ever got to the bit had Nia Jax not broke her nose. That's a sliding doors moment. Whereas Becky, Bianca, Sasha, Bailey have got over because they've been entertaining. People wanted to like them. Charlotte has maybe got a bit of the old Roman stank about her, where she has been. Everyone knows that she is the one that they want. She's the face, their face, and people just might not like that.
Very important question. No, I have one very important question for the both of you on this.
Okay.
Who's your favourite Bronte sister?
I'm Gremlin, I think.
Oh, well done, Ben. Very good.
I concur.
You've got it now, haven't you? Yeah, you've got it now, yeah? Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
Neither of you walked into the trap. You didn't even know it was there. I put enough sticks and leaves on there, but you've still managed to avoid it without even knowing it was there. That's,
well, you know.
I take my hat off to you, I really do. Well played, gents, well played. Break time.
Yes, well, I think that is a good... after I feel better having got my rant out of the way there. I felt it was cathartic there. And I hope everyone listening did as well. I've got a funny feeling that Jennifer Smith probably won't enjoy that last half hour. However, don't take it as a personal attack, Jenny. We all still love you on the Special Relations podcast. Yes, that is a good time as any to finish off this first half. Excellent first half, if I don't say so myself, gentlemen. But that being said, we will need to see you on the other side. And in my room, I'm alone in my room, and maybe staying here for just a while. And in my casket, I'm alone in my gloom, and maybe staying here for a while. Oh, can't you see, light is only in your eyes. Would I wrestling fans, welcome back to the second half of the Special Relations podcast. We're always one first from steering away from our regularly scheduled programming. However, for once it's not for a crazy tangent involving Kevin Pressman or Johan Niskins or anyone from the American 1950 World Cup team that beat England in that very famous game.
Oh, come on!
Oh yeah,
it's okay. We've all had glorious failures, some more than others, to be fair. So give me that one. Was it? I'm trying to think. Yeah, Costa Rica, Iran, New Zealand, just to name but a few. Yeah, got you back on side there, boys, didn't I?
Oh yes.
Anyway, as I said, after that tangent where we've gone away, there is a, actually, for the first time ever, breaking news, special relations history is being made right now, as we actually have news breaking on the show. I'm sure this will be talked about more in depth on the next episode of Main Event when you hear this. So you might have already heard the Main Event by the time it comes out. However, as if to make mugs of us, whilst we were talking about how there's something for everyone and there's the core six, Ring of Honor have put out a statement half an hour ago as we record, so 8:24 British time, which I believe is 25 past 3 Eastern time. Ring of Honor put out a statement saying, throughout the pandemic, our top priority was to keep everyone healthy and safe. And despite not producing any live events over 18 months, we were able to keep everyone fully contracted. We now find ourselves at a time where we need to make changes to our business operations, and we are planning a pivot for Ring of Honor with a new mission and strategy. The year will culminate with a final battle in December, and we will be taking the first quarter of 2022 to work internally to reimagine Ring of Honor. ROH is the most dedicated fans in the industry, and we appreciate your loyalty and patience as we reconceptualise ROH. We anticipate returning to live events in April for Supercard of Honor with a new fan-focused product and provide a unique experience for wrestling fans. So, about 20 minutes after that, so at 8:15 UK time, so it should be 4:15, sorry, 8:45 UK time, which is 4:45 Eastern time, Dave Meltzer reports Ring of Honor released everyone from their contracts, more to come. So, not looking good for Ring of Honor, gents. Do either of you have any quick thoughts before we move on? Because that is genuinely quite big news as we are on here at the moment.
This is the end. Oh, my friend, the end. Yeah. To seal a podcast idea for one of our other colleagues, this all feels a very 20 years ago ECW, doesn't it?
Yes, all falling back. From 8 months ago. Sorry, 20 years and 8 months ago. Shocking and not surprising. I think we can safely file it under that. We were just talking about this off air. I feel like this day has been coming for a very long time. And I do think there are many books to be written on Ring of Honor. I think if this is the end for it, as it sounds like it probably is, it can hold its head up high before it finally is forced to take the final bow. I think it's been responsible for a lot of good in the industry in terms of updating professional wrestling styles. You can debate those styles, but again, not for the first time today. That's another issue. They've been instrumental in bringing that to increasingly large audiences in North America. Let's say that. But they've been on a hiding to nothing for a good few years now. And I'm sure this will get me some heat with some of our listeners, but I can take it. I have no choice but to. I'm not sure there's much of a need for them these days. 2016 was 5 long years ago. Look how different the landscape was then. Now in 2021, and a style that Ring of Honor helped to begin to popularize is now pretty mainstream in very important pro wrestling quarters. I just don't see how needed they are. Very sad, but I'm still, the only thing that really surprises me about it, that it's taken until October 2021 to happen.
Agreed. You got to say this, the company's been going basically for 18 years, sorry, and so somebody's going to have a hell of a tape library on their hands when they get it. But like Rory says, it's a style of wrestling that was, you know, took on first of all by TNA, you know, back when you got Joey and Styles. Then you could argue, there's not even an argument, then you could say WWE took it on with, you know, some of the, you know, with the NXT stuff and some of the other, you know, smaller guys make it into the main roster. And now you've got AEW doing what they're doing. And along with, say, when New Japan come over, you know, do we have a place anymore for an ROH? And sadly, by the sound of things, we don't.
Yeah, I went. I've actually been to Ring of Honor show. I went when they did their last 2018. I think they did a show. Maybe it was 2017 because Cody was still the champion at the time. I remember that. But me and my pals went because they had the Bullet Club. They had Naito there. They had all the New Japan guys over. Didn't go for best of in the world. Didn't go for Jay Lethal. Didn't go for Kenny King. They sold 1,200 tickets that night on the back of New Japan. They sold 20,000 tickets to Madison Square Garden on the back of New Japan. When that relationship went south and when the Bullet Club all left, or the Elite left, there's nothing there to... There was nothing that ROH did. They relied too heavily on a core amount of people who are never going to stay there that long. Either weren't theirs in the form of the Bullet Club and all the New Japan guys, or were never going to stay long because Ring of Honor, with the best will in the world, was never going to be anything higher than number three, potentially number two. When Impact all these years have probably still been higher than them. It's all very sad because they popularised a style which is now on telly every single week in the form of NXT, in the form of All Elite Wrestling. But in the space of as we were talking about off air, 2.5 years ago they sold out, a Ring of Honor show sold out Madison Square Garden. Take out 18 months of a pandemic where they didn't run very much, and then it's all like within a year, they have got a year of working in front of a crowd. Even pre-pandemic, their crowds were sparse at best. They went from second or third in North America to a distant fifth, a distant sixth even, once NWA started putting power on, because that had more views probably than Ring of Honor did. Very, very sad. It remains to be seen what's happening. The key takeaway there is they anticipate being able to come back for Supercard of Honor. Now, that's the one they normally run WrestleMania weekend. You've got to think they would want to aim for that. If they hold a show in Dallas, you've got to think that they need to aim for that to form any form of traction potentially on a comeback. If they don't make that, then they could be on life support. Sounds as if they're probably on life support already, which is very, very unfortunate.
It reads me the lines like Sinclair basically just pulled the money, haven't they? That's what it reads to me as.
It certainly sounds like it. I also wonder now, not a conspiracy theory, but I think I did see a rumour that Tony Khan was floating around to try and find other, because as we were talking about the All Elite Network, or the AEW, the rumoured AEW streaming service, they've only got 2 years worth of content. Got a lot of content in that time because they've had Dark and they've got Elevation, they've got four shows now. But he was wanting to find other libraries that the WWE haven't bought to potentially put on there to supplement the AEW stuff. I wonder if he's gone sniffing around to try and get the Ring of Honor library, and Sinclair have just gone, fuck it, just have the whole thing.
Name your price, we've named it. Right, now it's your turn.
I genuinely don't think Tony Khan has tried to buy Ring of Honor or anything like that, but I think he may have gone to Sinclair to ask to inquire about it, and they've just gone, just fucking, there's the keys to the kingdom, just take it. interesting. I mean, it could be an interesting. I think the key to what happens is potentially how Final Battle in December finishes. If that's got the vibe of Guilty as Charged 2001 or the last Nitro, then that could be very telling.
If we start unifying your titles, then we're in trouble.
Yeah, if you start putting titles on guys who might be marketable elsewhere, like a rhino. You finish the show with Rob Van Dam finishes the show. You finish the show with Samoa Joe, who hasn't been in Ring of Honor for. If it's basically like a greatest hits, then you know the lights are going off at the end of the night and they're never coming back on. So, but Rory, you have expert insight on how the end of a company works. In another life, so we might do a Twitch just for old time's sake for Ring of Honor, and we'll get you on to get your inside analysis on is this the end? My oldest friend, the end.
Yeah, I've seen it twice in the space of 2 months this calendar year, so yeah, it stays with you. So, I'm always blurring the timeline lines, aren't I? Gives me something to talk about in 20 years' time as well.
Absolutely, yeah. So, coming to the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast in October 2031. 2041? Jesus.
Come on.
And coming to that second-rate piece of shit Wrestling 25 Years Ago podcast in 2045. So, very... very unfortunate, and we remain to see what happens. We could be sitting here talking in April that Ring of Honor have come back and they're the greatest thing since sliced bread, greatest thing since fucking AEW Dynamite debuted. But, one for Rory there, oink oink. So any final thoughts, gents, or shall I pass the baton as was planned to Mr. Ben Locke?
Yeah, we'll come back to this in December.
Yeah, I think as the story's developing, this is our initial reaction, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like I say, I think it's one that we need to get to December, see what happens, and then go from there.
Yes, absolutely. In that case, Ben, I have the baton. We're rounding the final bend. You've got the last 100 metres right in front of you. I am handing the baton over. Sprint away to the finish line to win the Olympic gold as our 4x100 meters did this summer, I think.
Excuse me, have you seen the size of me? There is no way I am on the final bend of anything. Let's.
you are taking us home.
We would have to be well ahead for me to be on the last leg.
What's happened is we've put out our Usain Bolt first. We've put out Rory first. Everyone is in awe at the start line. Everyone's in awe at the start line, so they don't start because they've got a podcast legend next to them. They don't even give up. They are just all standing by themselves, and then the two of us can just basically walk it. Because my best 100 meters was about 3.5 minutes. So I'm right there with you, Ben. I'm the furthest thing from fucking athlete. Anyway, baton handed over. Smooth transition. We're well within the box. Away you go, sir.
Thank you. We all want to do on this show. We like to end things with our interview review. Although this month it was more of a documentary review. It was my pick. And I picked the episode of Dark Side of the Ring that focused on the Owen Hart incident, the Owen Hart tragedy, however you want to phrase it. Really, I picked it was a couple of reasons. One, as we'll get into, it's a really bloody good episode of television. And two, obviously, last month we were talking about AEW and the Owen Hart Foundation. So at that time, it was exceptionally timely. Now it's just timely. So I'm just going to ask both gentlemen quickly. Rory, I know you, how many times have you seen this now?
This is the second time I've seen it.
Callum, I remember last month you said, is this the first time you'd watched it?
Yep. For us? This was the first time I've seen it, yeah.
So I'll let you get your thoughts. I'll go to Rory first. Rory, so going back to the first time you watched it and this time, this time you knew what you were expecting, but was there any sort of hidden angles that, you know, you weren't expecting? Is that the right thing? It's like, you know, did we expect them to go as hard into the WWE as maybe they did?
No, I really wasn't. Because the Owen Hart episode was part of Series 2, am I right in saying?
Yes. Episode 10 of Series 2.
That's right, yeah, there we are, yeah. So they kind of got a footing of what they wanted, a Dark Side of the Ring at that point. And I remember when Series 1 of Season 1 came out a few years ago, and there were a lot of complaints that the show only came in at about 45 minutes with commercials. I'm very glad this one was only 45 minutes with commercials, because when I first watched it, I had a feeling, I don't even know why I thought this, and it was obviously eviscerated within 1 second when I saw the timer on YouTube where I first saw it. I thought they might go longer on this one, and I'm glad they didn't. So watching it the second time around recently, I knew I would only have to steal myself for 45 minutes of this, but it was still bloody hard to do.
You said it's like the first time you've ever watched it. So would you say, so in my opinion, it's a great watch, but it is a very tough watch, like, you know, to say when you hear it all, it's always all facts, isn't it? Rather than opinions to begin with.
Yeah, it was a very tough watch. I was going to watch it whilst I was working, but I'm glad I did, because it was a shock to know, but it's an incredibly tragic story. I think it is essential viewing. I think you said that, Rory, as well, in our chat before we, during the week. It is essential viewing for anyone, but there was just a couple of things that you just think, this is, what a fucking waste. It really was. Again, it'll come as a shock to nobody. It was so avoidable. There was no reason for it to happen. But then you get the insight of Jim Ross, who was there. You get the insight of D.L. Brown, who was there. The Godfather. And then you've got Martha and the two kids, and you're just like, what was it, 7-3 when it happened? And it's just like, they have, when the bit that got me going first of all was in the first 5-10 minutes, and his daughter doesn't remember much about him, and you're thinking, like, that is, yeah, it was just all, it was more of a, it was, I'm just, yeah, it was just, it was, it was not an uncomfortable watch. It was an excellent, excellent show, and they left no stone unturned, and they didn't sort of hide away from anything. It was fantastic, but my God, it was also worse than I thought it was going to be.
Rory, Back in the day, Callum obviously wasn't even a fan at this point. Did you watch this live?
No, I'll tell you the story. I've been a fan for 3 years at this point, and as I'm sure I've said before, here in the UK we had all the pay-per-views for free. You need to have a Sky Sports subscription, but you didn't need to pay any extra for the pay-per-views. They were shown on bog standard Sky Sports 1 at midnight on the Sunday our time. And I've been a fan. Glory, glory days. And I've been a fan for 3 years and recorded every single pay-per-view without fail from SummerSlam 96, which we actually stayed up to watch, SummerSlam 97 as well. All the others, we'd record them and my brother and I would watch them shortly before school and college and then polish it off when we got back on the Monday. We normally go to bed about 10 p.m. that night on the Sunday, the day of the show or the day before the show here. I went to bed at 10 p.m. and I forgot to set the recorder for Over the Edge 99. And I got up to bed, and I've been in bed for about 10 minutes. Oh, no, you don't. I've been in bed for about 10 minutes. And I thought, oh, bollocks, I forgot to set the recorder for Over the Edge 99. Ah, I can't be arsed. I'm in bed now. It's only a B pay-per-view anyway. We can afford to miss one. We'll just catch the repeat on Sky Sports, the replay on Tuesday evening anyway. Nobody else is a wrestling fan, which they weren't still at this point. In 99, still wasn't popular at our college. That took another year or so. Nobody's going to give me any spoilers. We're not on the internet. We'll just tell my brother I forgot. He'll scowl at me on Monday morning over the cornflakes, and we'll just watch it on Tuesday evening, and no harm done. So there you go. Took the L on that one on Monday morning and went to college. Get to college, and a friend of mine comes up to me and he says, he was a bit of a lapsed wrestling fan. I borrowed some tapes off him a couple of years before. He hadn't been watching for a while. He comes up to me, right at the start of registration on Monday morning, he says to me, "So, Owen Hart then?" And I said, "What? What about Owen Hart?" And I thought in my head, what, did he win the title or something? Did he get inserted into the title match between Austin and Undertaker? Oh, what happened? He's dead. What? He said, yes, his safety harness sat. I can remember the conversation exactly where we were, in the science room. That's where our registration room was at sixth form. And what, his harness? What harness? What do you mean his harness? Because he was coming down from the roof. So what do you mean coming down from the roof? The roof of the arena? And he said, yes. Why was he from the roof of the arena? Because it was the Blue Blazer again. And that's when I thought, oh, fuck, okay, this is real now. And then we had whatever our first lesson was, and then second lesson was a free period, about 9:30. And I went into the common room, and Radio 1 was on, as it so often was, and it was like the second or third news story on Radio 1.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, this has happened now. And everybody, because the only thing, kept myself to myself, what you can believe that. But everyone knew I was a wrestling fan, ever the Enigma. And they were asking me about it, what I knew. I didn't know anything at this point. And just to complete the story, because I was still just stuck dumb. I don't know how I got through the day. But I didn't say anything to anybody. I didn't say anything to my brother, because I knew he wouldn't have any spoilers either, right? But I was wrong, because on the Monday after we had our tea, Danny, and then my brother, he said to me, I heard that one of the wrestlers died at Over the Edge. And I played dumb, because I didn't really want to admit it to you. I said, oh, really? He said, yeah, but nobody else knows anything about wrestling, so I think it was Triple H who died. He said, oh, okay. Then I just didn't say anything, kept quiet, pretended I didn't know anything. There we go. We get to Tuesday. Get through the day, come home. My stepdad says to us, sir, have you heard about that wrestler who died then? It's in the paper and everything. Yes, his safety harness snapped. And I clenched my teeth. I just managed to hold on for another couple of seconds. Then my brother flicked through the papers, like on page 16 of the Daily Mirror or something. And my brother just shouted out the words, Owen Hart. And that was it. I just went at that point. I just had to leave the room.
Hmm.
And I still don't know why we did this, but we still tuned in at 7 PM on Sky Sports 2 to watch the replay. Obviously, it wasn't shown. They just the graphic and that was it. But yeah, I can remember all of those 2 days so, so vividly. And here I am, just a fan 3,000 miles away. And I felt it that intensely even then. I cannot even begin to imagine what it would have been for the people who knew him and his loved ones. But yeah, a very dark couple of days.
The thing that I always go back to watching it live, and they mention it in the documentary. Two things they mentioned, actually. One, how did JR even keep it together? Like, not giving Kevin Dunn, you got 10 seconds to be alive and you've got to announce he's dead.
It's just unimaginable.
And then they do show King's face, and that image of just that King white as a sheet just stays with me forever and a day. Callum, just go back to you for a sec. I mean, Rory's kind of mentioned it there in his live memories, but the most shocking part of the whole thing for me was when they were talking about the safety clip and they showed it, because Martha's obviously got it.
Yeah, that got me as well, that this woman who has, and I'll hold my hands up, I've not been, this completely changed my opinion of it. I was always the wrestling fan that was going, well, why should she get to dictate how people on her own heart? She is not this grieving widow who had her husband killed at 33 years of age, avoidably killed at 33 years of age. Why is she, who is she to take Owen Hart away from me? I came out finishing that going, what the fuck were you ever thinking? You are a complete and utter moron, Callum. The strength and courage of this woman to pick herself up after losing her husband, losing the father of her two children, and go, no, this isn't happening. I am going to find out what happened. And she went to, she had buried her husband. She had spoke at the funeral, and I'm assuming that the words that she said, a day of reckoning will come, was that Was that on an interview, or was that, did she say that at his funeral?
That was at the funeral, I believe.
Yeah, I think she said at the funeral, this is my final promise to you, and all that. Mm-hmm.
So she's gone through all that, and then she gets immediately on a plane to Kansas City, and she's like, no, I'm finding out what's happened to you. And she went on the catwalk and took, or certainly took Oge with her. I don't know if she took Athena with her. But the strength of that woman to do that. And then she said she's got the clip and she's got all these documents. And I'm just how she could focus on that. And I suppose it was probably the only thing that would stop her going crazy at that point. But yeah, for 22 years she has not stopped, and I think that is just incredible.
I was just going to say, Rory, you know, we are talking here about a very, you know, a very intelligent woman, aren't we? And just in case people forgot, like, you know, and I don't like putting, you know, monetary values or whatever on, but they settled out of court and she got $18 million from this. So, you know, this is a company that's quite clearly admitting that they have done something wrong.
Oh, without a doubt. We all know that. Okay. And it makes me so, so angry when the WWE defenders, and they're not WWE fans. I would describe myself as a WWE fan, even though I haven't watched a weekly show for 10 years. I'd still describe myself as a WWE fan. The WWE defenders, and they're a very different breed, and I know who they are. We know one of them in particular. He's not listening to this. I hope he isn't anyway. There are others like him who will bend over backwards to try to negate, dispute, argue against, eventually completely ignore the pure, unadorned facts. Okay? Facts that are staring him in the face. They then take that into a character assassination of Martha Hart. Are you fucking kidding me? When they call her a money grabber, a gold digger, making it all about herself, loving the attention. These are all things I've seen online, and it makes my blood boil just thinking about it now. It's maddening beyond words, to be honest. I was gripping the table. I'm so fucking angry just talking about it. And this is the sort of thing this inspirational woman has had to put up with for 22 years and is doing so to this day. I think one thing the documentary got across really quite beautifully is, as you say, what an intelligent woman she is. She is a professor. I want to make sure I get her title right. Is she a professor of something?
I should have wrote.
I don't want to do it injustice and get it wrong. Something like that.
She's definitely a doctor. I think it's. Professor of childhood studies or something like that.
Something like that. Yes. I want to make sure I get that right.
You carry on talking. I shall have a look.
Yeah, you looked that up.
I found it here. So she has got a. She is a doctor. She is a Canadian philanthropist and researcher. She completed 2 degrees at the University of Calgary in psychology with distinction and sociology first class honours before moving to England to complete a master's degree and PhD in social and development psychology at the fucking University of Cambridge.
You don't get that online in like 10 minutes, guys. Let's just put it like that for those who don't know.
No, this woman is beyond intelligent.
And, the other part that comes out of the documentary is the two, you know, excellently articulate and emotional and funny children she's raised. You know, intelligent kids, you know, like Oge is a lawyer, I think you say at one point, don't you? And Athena's mm-hmm. with journalism. Again, you know, these aren't jobs you just get off the street and walk in.
This is why I, in fact, yes, all three of them. I really hope that one day, because she's said that she's graduated three times, I hope she's kept her mortarboards. So if she ever comes across any of these motherfuckers who say these sort of things, that those mortarboards can end up, well, you've already worked it out, haven't you?
And
yeah, Callum, I thought it was beautifully told that it said that towards the end, that what these people have achieved in the face of adversity that I can't even begin in my wildest nightmares to even consider. It's such a tough, it's such a difficult, difficult thing to watch. But as odd as it sounds, the fact that I knew what happened, as I'm sure everybody who watched it did, very few people probably went into this blind, but the fact that I knew what happened meant I was at least prepared for the possibility of there being some kind of a happy ending, as glib as that sounds, in the final 10 minutes, and I think we did get that. And it is infinite testament to the family, who are just, you know, it makes you feel up just thinking about what type of people they are, and this sort of thing just shouldn't happen to people of that renown. It really, really shouldn't.
I think, you know, that from those last few minutes they have found some inner peace. And I think, you know,
yes,
they are far bigger people than me. Callum, I say the most shocking thing, but for me as well, the whole bit around where, you know, the Hart family is basically turning into like an episode of The Sopranos where, you know, they were all backstabbing each other to get information to Vince. It's like, what are you doing? It's just, you know, like, what's happened to helping our family, helping our, you know, fellow person out instead of grabbing the money?
Yeah, I know Brett has in recent years been very vocal against Martha. Hiding something in the hope that Vince will do them good sounds very much up Bruce Hart Street. but I don't know how. So Owen was, correct me if I'm wrong, Owen's the youngest child, isn't he?
Correct.
Yes.
So I don't know how any one of these people could, at that point in time, and I know there's been, obviously Brett's reconciled, and there's been other Hart family members working for them. I don't know anyone in the immediate aftermath who has known what has happened to the baby of their family, work against the grieving mother and widow. It's just, the Hart family is fucked. It really is. I mean, it is so dysfunctional. Who was it that, Barbara Bush said, I want people to be more like the Waltons and less like the Simpsons. She should have said, I want people to be more like the Waltons and less like the fucking Hart family. Because they are dysfunctional. If dysfunctional families would look down at the dysfunction in the Hart family. They're just fucking mental. Obviously, the first time I've seen it, and there was a lot to take in 45 minutes. But that was, out of all the shocking stuff of, like, you've got the negligent rigging company. You've got, rightly or wrongly, and everyone's got their opinion on it, continuing the show after you found out he died. You've got the fact that the thing fucking happened in the first place. It would take a lot to top that for shocking. But to hear that some members of the family were actually trying to block her and sabotage her road to justice for this whole thing is just beyond bizarre.
It's like I say, it is like Sopranos screen life, but let's bring back to a little bit of wrestling, if you can. I mean, I think it's Jericho already said it in the interview that, you know, that almost the biggest tragedy as a fan is A, Ross Owen, and B, what we lost the year after, because let's face it, that's a guy who would have been to the races in 2000, 2001. That might be, as a fan, the biggest tragedy of the whole lot.
Oh yeah, it's just months away. It's just mouth-watering, the possibilities there, the combinations we could have had. Because also Owen actually wrestled Angle in one of Angle's first dark matches in May 1999.
Yeah, that was one of Owen's last matches.
It was May 99, so yeah, it must have been. let's hope that one day, I don't know what medium it will be, we eventually get to watch it, but let's hope one day we find out that the cameras are rolling there, eh?
Oh, I know. That's the new Holy Grail. That's the new Brett Tom McGee.
Yep.
Our good friends at Cage Match say that is the eighth to last match it was a dark match on Shotgun Saturday night on the 10th of May 1999.
Wow.
2 weeks, 12 days before.
Absolutely. And, I mean,
I don't know if any of you guys have managed to listen to JT's recent mailbag, the last mailbag episode he did, but somebody asked him what book Bret Hart had the Montreal Screwjob never happened. Not the Montreal Screwjob, sorry. Had he not had the Goldberg kick not happened?
Yeah, I heard it.
But Bret Hart, could you imagine if in another world, another dimension where Owen doesn't fall, this never happens. So you then don't have the effect where Bret's head's not in it. He doesn't get his head kicked off his shoulders by Bill Goldberg. And then they do go back. Bret does go back, and you have the SmackDown 8, and you have Bret and Owen in that tag division.
Gosh.
You think of the missed opportunities that Owen had as a singles competitor, but fuck me. It's just depressing to think about.
I think even that combination of 8 would be enough to have Ben reassessing his own dislike of Survivor Series. That poor.
Like, yeah. put some stakes in the match, and I am absolutely fine.
There he goes again.
But I don't need any stakes in that match. If you have Bret, Owen, Angle, Benoit against Los Guerreros, Edge, and Rey Mysterio, you could have an hour exhibition Survivor Series match, and I'd just, with no stakes whatsoever, they all shake hands and hug after the match. But yeah, I wouldn't really care.
I'm going to dream that one tonight, I hope.
I'm getting quite the fuzzy feeling down below thinking about that. So yeah, it was just, I know I was a bit just not dismissive of it, Ben, when you picked it. Obviously, I was a bit knowing what we'd need to watch, because I'd obviously never seen it before. Knowing what I'd need to watch, I wasn't looking forward to watching it, but I'm glad you chose it because it was a thoroughly good watch.
I think it's a subject matter that, I mean, by the very nature of this show's title, you know, it's not going to be an easy watch, any of these, at the best of times. But like you say, and given who was on it, you know, JR, Cornette, D'Lo, you know, Godfather, who was facing him that night, you know, they got a good cross-section of people.
Jim Corderas, who was in the ring when it happened.
Yeah, Corderas, who was even in the ring when it happened, yeah. And, you know, they had a really good cross-section of people who were there, you know, with their first-hand accounts, and that was good to see, because all too often with these documentaries, you do get sort of second-hand accounts where you'd skip that bit and you'd go to Martha getting the phone call, wouldn't you? Mm. But here you got it all, and you know, and I like I say, for me as a fan, you know, as a documentary fan and a wrestling fan, I like the fact they didn't cut any details out. It was all there in black and white for you, and you know, they weren't sugarcoated anything. There was an anti WWE fan to the interview, as there should have been, and you know, that was there, and all power to them.
So, whilst the subject matter of Owen, whilst I've just talked about how it was an uncomfortable subject matter and one that has been well trodden over in the past 22 years, and how much I have absolutely eviscerated the name of the Hart family, I'm going to keep that going. So next month, it is November. It is Survivor Series month. So next month is, we'll be watching the documentary interview that Jim Ross conducted called WWE's Greatest Rivalries, Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels.
Oh, that's a pick and a half, that is.
That I believe was, came out about 2010, 2011, not long after Bret reconciled and they did the whole hug in the middle of the ring.
Yeah, it was in that year, I think it was 2010. I think I got it a year or two later, but yeah, 2010, I think.
Yeah. So, it is not on the network. It was on the network. The first time I watched it was on the WWE network. They've taken it off because of the issue that Brett had regarding Stampede footage. No Bret Hart documentary is on the network anymore. However, obviously it did come out in DVD, and I know that you, the two of you, have told me in the past that you've got it physical hard copy. We're going to go old school. We're going to watch it on the physical DVD, and we'll talk about that next month. And I'm looking forward to it, because it's been a good while since I've actually sat down and watched it. So. Should be good. One of these days we'll do the complete non-interview review of Fraud Killer Michaels from the Vault.
Oh yes. So Ben, as is customary after our interview review, you get to pick the match we're going to live watch. So where are we going?
We are going to 1997. I am conscious of time, so we're going to be a 30-minute classic, so I'll let you know that one. So we go to May 26th of 1997. We are going to Rory's War.
We're going with this.
And we are going to watch a match for the World Tag Team Championship between the British Bulldog, David Roysmith, and the aforementioned Owen Hart against Stone Cold Steve Austin and making his return from his debilitating knee injury, the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
Ooh. Yes, I am there. 1:12:07, I'm sitting up.
That's the one, exactly where I am.
Guys, your timestamp is 1 hour, 12 minutes and 7 seconds. Once you're all there, let me know.
Yep, ready to roll.
Yep, I'm there.
Okay, and on 3... Okay, we will press play in 3, 2... One, play.
There we are. And as is customary, I haven't muted my sound. There we go.
that's usually my job.
There's the boy think.
So, looking at the blurb next to it, after weeks of threats, Paul Bearer looks to bring the Undertaker to his knees as he prepares to reveal a secret. Is this the episode that he comes out with that Kane is alive?
It's either Kane is alive or you're a murderer, isn't it?
Kane is alive, Undertaker!
No, I think this is where he first talks about the whole funeral home business.
Right.
The Kane is alive thing might be at the very end of the show now you mention that.
I mean, there's an example. So here's a show from the end of May. Kane doesn't make his debut to the beginning of October. We talk about one storyline, Talon. There's a prime example. Apart from Calendar's dog going crazy about the mention of Kane, of course.
I like that sign. Stone Cold kicks ass. Bloody right. What else do you need?
He really is the boy.
The dog has been lying next to me all night, and as soon as the bit that can't be edited out, she starts barking.
Yep.
Yeah, but, you know, we have it no other way. Let's face it, we've just had about 10 minutes of internet problems, so we might as well have internet and dog issues as well.
This is true.
We've got to make Rory work for his non-money.
Oh, non-money is it now? You wait till Cuscola. You wait till Cuscola hears about this. I tell you what, boys, we've been doing this for nearly 2 years now. Contract renegotiations can't be too long away.
It's going to be the second year anniversary next month.
About jumping ship, okay? Let's not go into that right now.
We're not doing that.
It's at this point that Scott comes out with, we are going to be looking to reconceptualise the place of the nation. We'll be taking the rest of the, we'll be taking quarter one off of the Special Relations podcast.
25 minutes, Dave Meltzer tweets that all staff from the Special Relations.
You've got three lads from Germany in next. they love talking some bio labour fusion.
God, the Hart Foundation were just immense, weren't they?
They really were.
I was so into them at this point.
Yeah, I was firmly, I mean, as much as I like DX now, like, I was firmly on the Heart of Iron Nation train back then.
I knew I wasn't supposed to like them, but I did anyway.
The thing about them was, like, as a great stable, they got the order right, they got the main eventer, they got the upper card guy, they got the tag team, and then they got, you know, the muscle, or however you want to phrase Nidar, but every group needs somebody like that in it to be considered a great. They got the numbers right, the numbers were believable, the people who were in it were believable. There was nobody jumping for jumping's sake.
They also had the very unique, I don't think anyone, or very few anyway, but certainly in a long time, where they have that distinct hierarchy, but they're all so interchangeable and it's believable as well.
No, like I say, you've got the tag team, but either of these guys could be your upper mid card guy.
And they were.
Oh, definitely.
But you could also have, if Brett and Sean wanted to do so, if they wanted to do something with Brett and Sean without the belt, could you believe that Owen could have a short run with the title or the Bulldog? Yeah. Not Neidhart, but certainly Owen Bulldog.
Owen and Bulldog.
You could believe having the IC or the European. It was just like a super group.
Well, if it wasn't for injuries, let's face it, Perman was going to have that program with Austin. The storyline was right. You know, the Hollywood Blonde storyline was right there. Mm-hmm. So. It was only like Pillman's injuries and the drugs and everything else that took him out of that.
Was it not originally, so what, this is May 26th, you're a few weeks away from King of the Ring. At this point, was it not meant to be Brett and Sean and Austin and Pillman at King of the Ring?
Yep.
Yes.
I think having I learned that just, from...
Having covered it just... Oh, go on.
I think I learned that from the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast.
Ching. Yep, absolutely right. All true. I reviewed this very much on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast with our friend Craig Wilson.
But it's a, you know, it's
we haven't heard it for way too long.
But it's a great series, you know, it's one of the great series of matches from Raw in 97. I mean, you know, we did that live episode. But Raw in 97 was, you know, eons better than Nitro. I know the ratings didn't reflect that, but.
I just was not watching Nitro at this point at all. It was flick over to TNT during the breaks on Raw if it was lucky.
Yeah.
But and is that nothing is that... on? I mean, this will earn me the ire of some of our friends in the chat. But I just couldn't stick on Nitro for any more than 2 or 3 minutes. I just couldn't do it.
But does that not? And if you allow me to break the rules slightly, does that not? That very point that you've made there, guys, does that not prove the point that we were making 2 hours ago? Where it doesn't matter.
Yeah, like, yeah, I guess it does.
You can have all the statistics, you can have all the ratings, you can have all the fucking demos that you want. If you don't enjoy it, you don't enjoy it. Mm-hmm. This is a distinct, in May 97, this is head and shoulders above a lot of the stuff you would get on Nitro. It was a lot more consistently good than Nitro was.
We all know this better than me because I could never do it. All the DVDs made it after a while, but I do know it was Mick Foley who said it. Like, they knew they had the better show. The ratings weren't reflecting they had the better show, but they knew
that was the
better show. I can't remember what DVD was on. I'm guessing it was on probably the Attitude Era DVD or something like that, but they until, you know, obviously it was it March 98 when they first beat Nitro.
April 98.
Was it not?
April 13th. Yeah, it was Vince Austin, yeah.
That's right. But the company as a whole knew, probably from the start of the Raw as War era, that they had the better program at that point. It was just getting the hearts and minds to change channel, basically.
If you build it, they will come.
Well,
yeah. You build a good show, they'll come eventually.
Lovely sell of the Flying Four on that from Davey.
Yeah. Yeah. Look at the four talents you've got here. You could build a whole company around these four. You've got people like Mankind, Brett, you know, there's another three. Obviously, Rock's on the rise. You know, there's another four or five guys.
Oh. Was I not?
You on?
Sorry, no, I didn't go on.
Yeah, there's a bit of a future echo there, a sign in the crowd, taking us from May 97 to October 2021 and WWE's current product. It reads, Stone Cold rules, and that's the bottom line, bitch. One of their 38 writers now, no doubt.
We're writing stories, pal.
But I remember, I don't know when it was, I think it might have been, because there's a lot of time where they had, and I don't know if this was a product of the storylines that we're going with, or it just so happened that, and I think Bruce Pritchard has said that he said it was just purely coincidence, but they were going America, Canada, America, Canada, America, Canada for about 6 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
The height of the Heart Foundation. And was there not a flag match? Was there not a flag match on Raw?
There was indeed.
And it's like, you have Brett, Owen, Bulldog on one side, Austin, Dude Love, The Undertaker comes out at the end of that, and the whole thing is just oozing with star power. The crowd are eating everything up, and then obviously you've got eating everything up. You've got fucking Canadian Stampede, where they're rightly in Canada. Treated like royalty.
Well, the scary thing about Canadian Stampede, you've got to remember, like, as great as that match is, because of injuries and circumstances, that's a match that's missing Sean and Sid from it.
That's true, yeah.
Fucking Goldust should not be in that match.
It does, it really does crack me up when they set that match up a couple of weeks before and Dustin runs into the ring and he says, they issued a challenge to the five best wrestlers in America. And I'd say looking in this ring right now, and I know I'd say very differently, Dustin, my man.
I say this is the first five guys who were talking about it.
but even still, like, so you get guys like Goldust, who was of such a name that they could put in a main event, and it doesn't really look, I mean, it does look out of place, it's fucking Goldust, he's dressed like a fucking Oscar statue, but it's not that far of a stretch. It's not Savvy Vega at No Way Out of Texas.
The thing you'll remember is we're taking a piss out of Goldust there, but this is the main event, Jim Neidhart in it, so you know, that bar ain't particularly high to begin with.
This is a freaking hawk.
Well,
fucking hawk. I mean, I do wonder if, I mean, you can't improve on perfection, but you know, it would have been nice. And again, you want to watch it from a distance, but wouldn't it have been nice if Sean had been on Team USA for that one?
I think, the heat would have been nuclear, but I think he would have took away from it actually, from the match.
That's a good point. Yeah. And I do wonder how, let's say, again, bring this back full circle, how professional he would have been in such a situation. Shawn Michaels of 1997, we're talking about here, right?
Yeah.
And all the baggage that comes with that.
And the other part that you've got to remember is that the main story of that match actually is Owen versus Austin.
Yes.
Brett versus Austin.
I think for that match to work for the, like, where everything goes after, they were obviously building that Austin as a next big thing. You had to have Austin as team captain. And I think if Sean's there, I think Ben's right, I think Michaels would have done his damnedest to make sure he's number one.
Yeah, to try to take all the limelight away.
I think you'd have other matches as well. So you have four matches, you attack and great Sasuke. That's what it is. The other two matches, Triple H and Mankind and The Undertaker and Vader. I mean, that is just like main events in 75% of your match.
One of the greatest pay-per-views of all time, that show.
No question.
Oh.
Easily the best in your house, I would say.
There you go.
And it's just a spry 145, 150.
Yeah.
It's people talk about events they can throw on at any time. That is one you can throw on at any time.
Contrary
not even
to
2 hours worth.
Contrary to what I've been told, bigger isn't always better. Longer isn't always better.
Had to get that one in the portion of the show we can't edit, eh, Callum?
There you go.
Well, you know.
Dog's barking now, isn't he? She.
Well, I am.
I'm dog sitting. I'm working from home, so you can tell that I have had a couple of Heinekens in me. If I'm making fucking length jokes.
Right. Despite all their chemistry, they can never quite get the switch in music right, Sean and Bulldog. for whatever reason, they never could, and I don't know why it is, but there you go. One of them things.
Rory, last month you said you didn't like the pedigree, and so the switch in music into the pedigree. What are your thoughts on the stunner into the switch in music? I'm tending to find that works slightly better.
It does.
Slightly.
And I'm probably slightly, my biases are coming to the fore again here as well. But the principle's still the same, I've got to say. It's still a move that normally knocks your opponent down.
I'm with Rory.
From a physics perspective, I can explain it away a little easier than I can with the pedigree, but I'm stretching myself to do so. Just look how dynamic this show was at this point. The match ends, the very second the bell rings, Owen is on him instantly. The Hart Foundation are in. Austin slips outside, sees Brett as easy prey, beats the fuck out of him, and then the Hart Foundation chase him off. It's just the dynamism that the programme doesn't have. I know he'd say things were better in the old days. That's not always true. But just the snap the show's had at this point. I really do miss it.
It's the character level. It's the level of the characters and the depth that they have at the time. Like you say, like, I mean, I know we were talking about belts as props in the first half, but in this particular example, like, it sounds like losing the belt isn't the important thing. Beating the shit out of Sean is the important thing.
Yes.
Getting rid of Sean as an enemy for Brett, and then, like you say, Brett gets left alone, and, oh, here comes another one. He's got the other guy he's got after him. Maybe we should have, instead of going later focus on one, we should have split our guys into two.
Just quickly, did that match make your top 100? It didn't make mine. It didn't miss by much, though.
I want to say, I haven't got the list in front of me, but I want to say it did, but low down.
Yeah, for me, it's a very, very high quality, very, very high quality TV match.
Memory is telling me, and I haven't got my other phone to hand where the list is, unfortunately, but I would say it was at about 70 to 80 range.
Of course, you know what I'm going to say now, don't you?
Go on.
10 hours.
Yeah.
We're not going. I'm not going back to listen to it to find out. By the way.
Excellent pick, Ben. Great. It was really great to see that match.
That's an easy four to court. You know, if we're going by Mitch and stars and all that, which you know, it's an easy four to court a star package for me that match.
One of my very favourite time periods too. So thank you, my friend.
You're all right, mate. Anytime.
Yeah. Callum, I think it's wrap-up time, my man.
Excellent choice, I think it is. So, wonderful choice, and obviously we've got... I'll need to think long and hard about what match I'm going to choose next month. We've already got a couple in mind, so hopefully you'll be pleasantly surprised. Yes, it is time to wrap up, so I'll just throw over back to Ben. What have you got... just dropped coming up on the QuadrPod and Instagram.
Okay, so up on the Pop feed, I'll start there with Popcorn Chicken Salad. Matt Souza and Logan Crosland forced me, and I'm using the word forced, me to watch the Adam Sandler film Little Nicky. You know, they say about doing things for your art, guys. That was me doing watching that for my art, and you know. We'll leave it at that. You know this whole bad watching bad things. I thought this would be a laugh and hoot. This tested me to my very limits. And speaking of that, on the wrestling side of things, we are going to be reviewing and talking about somebody's favourite old pay-per-view of all time. So I'm going to let them talk about that.
So before I delve deep into that one, Rory, what have you got in the horizon?
Yes, new episode of Senior Video will be landing next week. We have had a few scheduling issues, unfortunately, but I will make sure I get something out on Monday as planned. Look out for the second annual Senior Video Christmas special, which will be landing in early December with a couple of guests. Yeah, I'll just say it. It's with Callum and Ben. All right, let's kill the suspense now. Everybody knows anyway, right? Let's see the sea and all of that. And of course, you can hear me on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. Coming up on the day this show is released, actually, you've got October 2001, held by Chris Lacey with Yully and Dell in City as well. So you can probably guess how that one goes. I listened to that show today. Just want to say they unveil a brand new match rating system. Not going to give you any more clues. You couldn't work it out anyway. It's not quite as obvious as me having Callum and Ben as guests on my other show. But do listen out for that one. And coming up next month, of course, the end of the invasion angle. Were we ever so young? With no fewer than three WWF shows. We've got the Rebellion pay-per-view. We've got one show for Survivor Series. And, as has been done before, but copy the best, a show dedicated purely and solely to the Raw after Survivor Series, the consortium and all of that. So do listen out for that as well on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. Take a breath. Callum.
Yeah, so unfortunately some scheduling issues meant that I couldn't join the boys for the Croc and Roll tapings this month. I did put my one dropped last Friday, and then we've got another one dropping a week Friday. As you're listening to this, one has gone not yesterday, the week before, and another was due to come up the following week as well. So January 86, back on the timeline, there's some excellent stuff, and I did put in, edit in some comments of my own, so you will still hear my voice, but not with the guys, which is unfortunate because it was some excellent stuff. However, I will be joining. No scheduling issues this time. I will be joining for my delayed first appearance. It was meant to go over the summer as well. My delayed first appearance on Popcorn Chicken Salad. Not Popcorn Chicken, actual chicken salad, proper stuff. Mike Bassett, England manager, it's happening, Ben. where we talk about Battle Bowl 93, and I am absolutely buzzing. I cannot wait. it is so shite, but it's so good as well. I cannot wait. Genuinely cannot wait to watch this show. I've watched it. I can't wait to talk about it with the guys, because I know it's not everyone's favourite. That's what I've got coming up as well. Also, please like, subscribe, follow PlayStation.tv. Twitch.tv/PlayStation. PlayStation all one word on YouTube, and the new PTBN Live Facebook group. So that's where all your video content and stuff's going to come from as well. So. So give them a follow, like, subscribe. All different terminology for all different platforms, but you get the idea. Sorry, I've been distracted by my excitement for Battle Bowl 93. Yeah, come on. that's what we've got coming up. Loads of stuff coming up as well on the quad of pods as well. So always remember to like and subscribe on your favourite podcatcher app as well. But with that being said, I think it's time that the time has come to say goodbye for another month. But we'll be back next month, November, for our 2-year anniversary. Imagine that, guys. We've made it past the audition. We've actually made it 2 years of talking some very smart things sometimes, but predominantly nonsense. So congratulations to you both for that.
And you said we won't last 2 episodes.
Well, our second episode was a live watch of December to Dismember, so I think we said it wouldn't last more than 2 episodes.
That was right, that was one.
It was almost like our podcast was almost like Abe Simpson going into the Burlesque house. It was, hello, you back. Popping the hat on, you're fine. Popped taking the back off and off we went. But no, we have lasted 2 years and next month will be the 2 year podcast anniversary special. So until then, we will see you next time.
Hey, how you doing? Sorry I can't get through. Why don't you leave your name and your number and I'll get back to you. Hey, how are you doing? Sorry I can't get through. Why don't you leave your name and your number and I'll get back to you.